Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. It's a daily show, yes daily, covering the NBA champion Cavaliers and the NBA at large. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Cavs and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, or Google Play. If you'd like to submit questions, inquire about an ad, or just say hi, email the show at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. And if you're a fan of the show, please give us a rating and review on iTunes, as it helps other people find the podcast. Now, here's today's show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning. I'm an editor at Fear the Sword and a staff writer at Hardwood Proxies. But before we get to today's guest, I just want to note that this podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download their app, and it's the easiest way to get tickets for any sporting or concert event that you may want to go to. But today's guest is a staff writer at Fear the Sword, a staff writer at Wolf Among Wolves. And for our topic today, I think he's the perfect guest. It's William Bull. Bill, what's going on, man?
Not much. Just put the kids to bed. I'm ready to talk some Kevin Love and Andrew Wiggins trade. One of my favorite subjects in the whole basketball world.
You mean people's takes on over the past 2 years haven't gotten to you yet?
Yes, they get to me. But it's now the dog days. This is the kind of subject that is meant for this time of year. So I'm actually kind of grateful that the anniversary is always going to be in the middle of dog days this summer, because it's always going to give us a chance to, like, think about it more.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the reason we're doing this podcast, for those of you who may be wondering, why are you doing this now? Today is August 23rd, and it is the 2-year anniversary, officially, of when this deal went down, of when the Cavaliers traded Andrew Wiggins, who they took with the top pick that summer, and traded him to the Wolves for Kevin Love. It was a deal that that became rumored even around the draft, if I remember correctly, and it became an even bigger deal once LeBron decided to go back to Cleveland. I think it's fair to say that that deal really changed both teams' immediate and long-term outlooks. For the Cavs, it was very clearly, okay, LeBron, A, wanted this, B, this is going to help us win right now and help us win a title right now while LeBron is in the middle of his prime. And for the Wolves, it was the reset. It was, okay, the Kevin Love era did not go as we had hoped it would. It's time to, he doesn't want to be here. It's time to trade him, and it's time to go get a young guy. And Bill, I don't think I'm going too far in saying that I think both teams, 2 years later, have gotten what they wanted out of that deal, I think it's one of those rare trades where there very clearly is not a winner and a loser, in my opinion.
I think you're right. There's a lot of layers to it. The trade itself, you could say that the Cavs won the trade right now. It'd be pretty easy to make that argument just because they got the better player. Love is the better player of the two, and the Cavs just won a title. So, I mean, they've got kind of already, as far as what they wanted to accomplish with it, they've achieved that. The Wolves have not, but the Wolves are on a longer timeline with what they wanted to achieve with that trade, which was kind of a reset, sort of. You know, they still flipped, you know, people are going to forget it. You know, it's just going to get lost. It's going to be part of the trivia question. But, you know, the Wolves took on Anthony Bennett and also got a first round pick and then immediately flipped that pick to the Sixers for Thad Young. So, you know, Wiggins is seen as this first part of, like, the Wolves rebuild, but that wasn't necessarily exactly what they were going for until everybody got hurt that first year Love was gone. And now, you know, that kind of helps the Wiggins, that kind of helps the Wolves, like, side of the ledger, because it's not just that the Wolves got Wiggins. It's like the Wolves have Wiggins and Cat, and now they're like really on this trajectory towards, you know, being one of the best young teams in the league. But I think you're right. Like, as far as just making a pragmatic trade, and as far as both teams making a smart decision for what they needed to do, both short and long term, that was that he can't really ask for much more than that. And I'm not sure, you know, I'd have to go back and look. There are lots more, there are plenty of smarter people who would probably know offhand. I'm trying to think of another trade where you could really say that, where clearly both teams got exactly what they wanted out of a deal. A deal of this magnitude, anyway. You know, sometimes two role players get swapped or something like that. But a deal of this magnitude where both teams, you could say, well, both teams won. Like, it's pretty rare for something like this to happen, right?
Yeah, I'm going to – this might be a little bit of a hot take, but I look at the Harden trade, which I know gets, you know, talked about to death even more than Love and Wiggins. But in a sense, yes, the Thunder probably lose that trade in a broad sense because they traded James Harden, who, when he's not kind of being goofy, for lack of a better way to put it, is like a very, very good player and almost won the MVP 2 years ago. They got Steven Adams out of that deal. And yeah, like Jeremy Lamb and whatever didn't work out. And Kevin Martin didn't work out. But they got Steven Adams, and at least like they got something out of that and got a guy who's going to be a foundational piece for their franchise moving forward. I'm not saying like that is exactly the same as this, but that's the only thing that comes into mind when I think about it. Looking back, Bill, before we kind of just dive into like what makes this deal good for both teams 2 years later, when it happened, were you, from the Wolves' perspective, was this a good thing? And was this the way you were good with it? And then conversely, was this, if you're the Cavs, did you think this was a smart idea?
Okay, so from the Wolves' perspective, just living in Minneapolis and covering the Wolves so closely, this was exactly what everybody kind of hoped for. This was like the dream scenario. No one really wanted to trade Kevin Love until it became painfully obvious that that was the only thing that was the only logical conclusion to the summer, was that Love was going to have to get dealt. I think everyone was very happy with how well Flip Saunders played his hand with that, because he could have settled, he could have panicked and pulled the trigger on a lesser deal. Flip Saunders played it well. He could have settled for a lesser deal earlier in the summer. He could have taken some package around Klay Thompson, maybe, you know, I don't know. The Warriors will say that they weren't going to pull the trigger on that anyway, but, you know, maybe they would have. I don't know. Klay really didn't want to be here, so that would have been another awkward, you know, situation. You know, Flip held strong through the draft, and I'm sure on draft night, given all the connection that Danny Ainge has to Kevin Love and probably always will, you know, there's got to be some fire to all that smoke. I'm sure the Celtics called and offered some menagerie of picks, and Flip held out, and you know, once LeBron went back to Cleveland, the kind of the perfect situation sort of materialized. And Wiggins was, I thought, the perfect candidate to start the rebuild around. So it really, from the Wolves' perspective, made perfect sense. From the Cavs' perspective, yeah, it made sense too. Though the question that I had about the deal, you know, it's the question that you have every time three stars get together, is how is this going to work? You know, I did wonder a little bit about how Love would fit that Chris Bosh role, just because he's just not the kind of defender Bosh is. So I wondered exactly what the defense is going to look like. I thought they still had some serious shortcomings there. Obviously, I just had to educate myself about Tristan Thompson kind of filling the gap.
No, I mean, you were right. I mean, it really took Timofey Mozgov, when he was really healthy that year when they got him from the Nuggets, to really fix that defense. I mean, Tristan's been great, don't get me wrong, and he was way, way better than Mozgov this past season. But that first year without Mozgov and without J.R. Smith and without Amon Shumpert, that season doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and maybe they would have figured it out. I don't think they were going to go 41-41 or anything over the course of the full season. I think they would have figured it out, but Mozgov really kind of cemented them and jump-started them towards putting that super team together and really being, or I guess making the super team look like a super team. So that was answered pretty quickly, but I was curious to see how he'd be used in the offense. I was imagining lots of pick and rolls, and I was imagining a lot of love at the elbow throwing to LeBron and Kyrie cutting off the ball. And obviously that hasn't materialized.
No, exactly. not at all.
But it's, you know, they pushed the Warriors shorthanded to 6-1 year and they beat them the next. So it's pretty hard to argue with the results. You know, the whole thing obviously worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple things that I think hang over this from the Cavs side that sort of skew what ultimately has transpired and what has happened. I think the Chris Bosh thing is super important because I think what Bosh was with those Heat teams as a defender and as being able to shoot threes and just, but mostly the defensive stuff as a five was so valuable, and Love was probably never going to be able to do that. He's not as athletic. He's not as long as Chris Bosh. And I think that sort of, you know, everyone, including myself, really wanted him to be that, but he's not. Two, I think when he got traded, I think the general perception of him as a spot-up shooter was probably a tad bit oversold. He's a good three-point shooter, but he's not exactly been a knockdown three-point shooter. He's been a little bit inconsistent since he's come to the Cavs, and he hasn't always been making teams pay for leaving him open on the wing. And it's tricky. At the time, if I remember it, I was in favor of keeping Wiggins. I also was just really hype on Wiggins because I just watched all this stuff. I don't watch very much college basketball, if any, but I remember watching all these YouTube tapes of Wiggins. I was like, oh my god, this guy's awesome. Like, he's going to be this like perfect two guard for Kyrie. And I had this like idea, and like LeBron's going to mentor him and all this stuff. But this is the crux of my argument in the sense that I ultimately think the deal had to be done. Besides the fact that LeBron probably was like, we need to get Kevin Love, and ultimately you have to do that, the idea of Andrew Wiggins, including of where he is heading into his third season, doesn't exactly align with what he is. The idea of Wiggins is that he's this super long, super good defender who can hit threes and handle the ball and just do all these things. At the moment, I think it'd be fair to say he, night in and night out, isn't always consistent on defense. He's locked in when he's playing Durant and LeBron and Harden and like those elite guys. But if he's, you know, if he's guarding Matt Barnes or if he's guarding your random average NBA wing, he's not as engaged. He's also partially this is because of how Sam Mitchell organized the offense last year. Takes a lot of long twos, and he is not a really good 3-point shooter yet. The shot to me looks fine when I've watched film on him and I've watched him play, and it looks good. Like the form looks good. I think he can get there. But he hasn't gotten there yet, and yes, that would function differently in Cleveland, where he probably would have had more freedom to shoot threes. But I just don't think, because he's so young and he's so malleable still, that what he actually could really be in 2 years or something like that does not really align with what the idea of him is, and he just never probably would have met I just don't know if he meets expectations of what people thought he could be in that role if he remains with the Cavs and Love goes to another team.
Right. I don't know if because what you want is what you think you have there is a pretty rare skill set, right? This long wing defender who, like you said, can do all those things and kind of be Andre Iguodala. But
and that guy, frankly, is perfect next to LeBron. Like, that would be an ideal two next to LeBron James.
Right, but it takes a long time for Andre Iguodala to become Andre Iguodala. Like, that's not something you are when you enter the league. You have to grow into that, and you kind of have to be, when you're young and super athletic, I don't want to say you deserve to be the foundational piece of a team. Ideally, obviously, they would do what's asked of them to win games. You know, you would sacrifice kind of your touches, but he wouldn't be ready necessarily, I don't think, to be, you know, that complementary piece on a winning team. I think the Cavs would be pretty frustrated with him. While he hasn't shot a ton of threes in Minnesota, like you said, I'm not sure he would be this 3-and-D wing that I think everybody kind of wants the Cavs to get. You know, that they do, and if this gets pointed out, oh my God, in the finals, it got pointed out a ton, just in really annoying ways. Like, well, wouldn't Wiggins be helping in this series a lot more? And the answer is, I don't really know. No one knows.
Yeah,
if Wiggins would be helping in that series anymore, I'm not sure. The idea of you know, having him out there as a longer defender sounds nice, but you wouldn't have the same gravity pull on the other end of the court that Love has to open up space. So you'd be giving something back at the other end. And I really do. I think the Cavs would be somewhat frustrated with that, or maybe not frustrated, but he wouldn't, if the Cavs didn't make the trade, let's put it this way. If the Cavs hadn't made the trade, I don't think they win the title this year. You know, I think they needed Love. And while he didn't play great that entire series, I think they needed him. They needed him on the court in order to do everything on offense that they needed to do. They needed that shooter, because without him, you know, they really wouldn't have much shooting outside of JR. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because Shumpert's a non-shooter, and
right.
You know, Deli was kind of ineffective in the finals. Two things I think here. One, in the greatest ironic NBA Finals moment ever, Kevin Love literally filled the role Andrew Wiggins was idealistically would have filled in guarding Steph Curry late in Game 7 on that switch, and he did it twice. Like, I just want to point to, like, that was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, that really that really happened. That crossed my mind that night, and I just, that to me remains just the funniest thing, that Kevin Love did that, and it was like, that's the one thing he wasn't supposed to be able to do. Just really funny. Two, the thing with Wiggins that is super tantalizing to me when I watch film of him is that he has really good instincts as a slasher and a driver, and I don't know if he gets to develop those in a way that matters if he's playing between Kyrie and LeBron James in an offense that ultimately would have been very slow and very designed and heavily run on Kyrie and LeBron pick and rolls and isolation attempts, where he's just waiting to maybe be the fourth option on the team or something.
Right. No way. I mean, and the Wolves, just, you know, from watching them as closely as I do, I mean, they, especially last season and this season for long stretches, they really force fed him. You know, the first play of the game, they always called his number. Lots of post ups for him, lots of opportunities to drive into the paint. You know, they wanted him to concentrate on getting into the paint, going to the rim. They didn't want him to fall too much in love with his jumper. And I think his handles got a lot better in his second season. You could start to see him becoming kind of a more reliable scorer, especially in crunch time. There were a few games when he played really well in crunch time. And maybe in a more functional modern offense, he would look even better. And I'm excited to see that. You know, his awareness, I think, got better in his second season. He found teammates on some nice passes. He needs to get his assist numbers up. Like, that, there are still plenty of legitimate criticisms to make of his game, but, you know, it's taken a lot of reps for him. But the Wolves are giving him every opportunity to become a superstar. Like, they've kind of made him the foundational piece of their offense. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. His career trajectory would be completely different if he was still in Cleveland and Love had gone somewhere else. It would look so different. It'd be wild.
It'd be so wild. It'd be 100% a different thing. It's going to be really interesting when these two teams face off this year, because Tibbs knows LeBron so well, and, you know, just the storyline of this. And just to take, you know, Bill, if you wanted to get tickets for a Cavs-Wolves game, this is a really easy way to do that. They've made buying tickets online for sports and concerts a way less confusing process. It can be really hard to find the best deal for a game or show that you want to go to, and there are ticket sites that don't want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. Me, myself, just recently, my dad and I in Cleveland are trying to go to Indians games. It's a really hot ticket right now because the Indians are good and they're, you know, maybe going to bring that second title to the land, and it can be really hard to get tickets. We're looking for next week when the team comes back in town, and SeatGeek's been the best way to find that. You know, and Paul McCartney was just in Cleveland, and at the last minute, I thought about maybe going to see Sir Paul. But if I was going to do it, it would have been through SeatGeek. They had pretty reasonable tickets and all the best offers, and it made it really easy because I could see all these different prices for tickets right in the app. And if for my listeners today, we have a special deal. All of my listeners can get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do to get your $20 rebate is to download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOCAV, so that's L-O for locked on, C-A-V-S, and SeatGeek will send you a $20 rebate after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, just so download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOCAVS today, and you'll get a $20 rebate off your first purchase with SeatGeek. And I promise you will not regret using the app. It's the best option you have out there for buying tickets, and you won't be disappointed. So, Bill, I am very excited this year to see these two teams play. I think they're very much both on the right track of where they want to be. They both have different immediate and short-term goals. And I think that's sort of where this sort of heads, is the Cavs are in a position, even if they're going to be the underdogs, to probably play in a third straight finals to make a run. And it's partially because Kevin Love is there. The Wolves with Wiggins are in this position where they're going to, with Tom Thibodeau and Karl Anthony Towns, to really maybe push for a playoff spot. I believe Andrew Wiggins recently said that he thinks the Wolves are going to make the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. So both these teams are exactly where they want to be. And so I ask you this question. Do you think criticism of this trade, especially from the Cavs end, because I think that's where a lot of the flack ended up, sort of are relevant at this point? Because I personally don't know if I think they are.
No, I would say no. I mean, you know, it's fun to like think about it. But I don't think it makes any sense anymore to, you know, wring your hands about it, like, because both teams got what they needed to get, and it really, you know, if Love and Kyrie hadn't gotten hurt, you know, there's a chance we could be talking about back-to-back titles or something like that for Cleveland. I don't know. You know what I mean? You're going to start playing the what-if game. Like, maybe things go completely different for Cleveland in year one at the end, because they became a juggernaut. Once, like you talked about Mozgov earlier, once Mozgov solidified the defense, like, that first Cavs team became a juggernaut. Like, they went, what, 31-3 down the stretch or some ridiculous thing? I mean, yeah. They were just killing everybody. And they rolled through the Eastern Conference just like they rolled through the Eastern Conference this year. So I get it when sometimes – and it's hard – I don't know. It's hard to always look at the big picture when you're watching a series and your brain starts to work in very, like – practical, concrete terms about what you're seeing on the court and what would help and what would help things go better. Another athletic wing defender is always going to seem like, oh God, like, yeah, we could absolutely use one of those. Like, geez, like, did you see all the penetration they got? Did you see all the open looks in the perimeter they got? Like, yeah, we could use another wing defender. That's always going to be something that pops up, and that's fair. And, I mean, there's a reason that wing defenders are getting paid the way they are in free agency. I mean, everybody wants them. So it makes sense, but it's, and this, this gets into a whole other part of Kevin Love is just how nuanced his effect on the team is, and how you can't always go by the numbers necessarily, or, you know, the raw, like, regular, you know, points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game. You know, it's the effect of both of these players, the effect of Love on the Cavs is nuanced, and the effect of Wiggins as far as like a reset for the Timberwolves to kind of start again and start over. Both things are bigger than just what you see on the court for either of them, if that makes sense. So
yeah, I agree.
To me, it's not worth like worrying about anymore, just because it's over. It happened. And really, I find it very hard to argue that it should have gone down another way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if you consider what it would have been like if, you know, the Cavs had made this trade, it's sort of like one of those things where, like, a comic company like DC or something goes back and they redo their whole continuity and just, like, everything's really wonky and they just make it wonkier because they try to fix it. And it's just like, you're just going down this rabbit hole that literally you cannot actually get out of, because there's literally no way to predict how things would have turned out. And for the Cavs, you won a title with Kevin Love. With the Wolves, you got Andrew Wiggins and he's in the right spot. I think long-term, the best way to maybe evaluate this deal will sort of be based on how Kevin Love is used in Cleveland. It would have looked a lot worse if he would have left last summer after that first year. Like, that would have been the point where I'd be like, okay, you know, they probably shouldn't have done it, because at least you would have known you controlled Wiggins and you had him under contract for a long period of time, plus you control him restricted free agency and all this stuff. How they use Love and what he becomes for the team as LeBron ages a little bit, that sort of, I think, would be where you want to, if you nitpick, because maybe that becomes like, okay, well, like, Wiggins would have been better than, maybe Wiggins, like, hit stardom or something, and it's like, okay, maybe at this point, he would have been at relatively this point, and then maybe you critique it again. But I just don't think it matters. I mean, you, again, the Cavs won a title with Kevin Love, and at the end of the day, I don't mean to pull a Pat Riley and, like, throw the rings argument on the table and plop them down and try to convince you, but it's literally, the only goal with trading for Kevin Love was to win a title and help LeBron James maximize his title window. They won a title and did that. And ultimately, I just don't know if there's another way to justify or explain the value of that trade. I just, at the end of the day, like, they won a title, and Kevin Love is a part of it.
Right. So I think I agree. I mean, it's so that kind of, that chapter of it is closed, but you're absolutely right about what happens next. Like, even, you know, this season, Brian Windhorst said something, you know, along the lines of, when Love signed his 5-year contract with the Cavs, even he kind of understood he probably wouldn't be finishing that contract in Cleveland. The title changes things for now. Obviously, they weren't going to trade him this offseason, but you know, it'll be interesting to see how next season goes. If the good feelings kind of wear off, if he decides he wants to move on, or if the team decides, you know, it might be more expedient to trade him for other pieces that maybe could help a little bit more. You're absolutely right about LeBron aging. Watching LeBron age and seeing if his game changes and at what age his game changes is going to be fascinating, because GMs are going to want to plan for that sooner. You know, I imagine David Griffin would like to plan for that sooner, but then you get into the flow of a season and you just want LeBron to be the same old LeBron. Like, everybody does. LeBron does. He wants to do the same things he always has. Where you know, we can think, like, philosophically, logically, it would make more sense for LeBron to get much better at his spot-up shooting, play off the ball, you know, maybe cut off the ball and let Kyrie and Love handle the ball a little more. But is that something he's going to want to do? Like, how is this next phase of Love on the Cavaliers going to look? And if that transition doesn't go smoothly and they trade Love, is that going to change how we look back at this trade? I can't really see, other than something tragic or horribly stupid happening, like Love throwing a hissy fit and demanding a trade, you know, three weeks into the season or something like that. Short of something like that happening, I really don't see any scenario where you would take this conversation we're having now and flip it and say, we were wrong. Like we were wrong and the Cavs were wrong to get rid of Wiggins. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's already kind of cemented to a certain degree, no matter what happens next.
I 100% agree. And you actually mentioned something kind of interesting. LeBron's future, on Thursday, we'll be talking to Trevor Magnotti, who wrote a piece about LeBron's longevity for Fear the Sword, about what LeBron's future looks like. And to kind of wrap this up, I'm of the opinion that Kevin Love, if they can find a way to organically use him at the elbow and in pick and rolls and on the block, can actually be a huge foundational piece of the next LeBron era as he ages and he becomes not overwhelming LeBron. He becomes sort of like half the time overwhelming LeBron, I guess, or a quarter of the time or whatever he ends up doing. And I think Love can play a really big part in that. But I don't know. If that Windhorst obviously knows more about the inside of what's going on with the Cavs than anybody, so it's definitely on the table. You never know, and it depends what they could get. You wonder if they would overreact to the Warriors and trade Love because of that. I don't know if that's actually smart, but, I mean, you have to consider that too. But, Bill,
I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not too. I don't think it makes a lot of sense to just overreact to that just because you have LeBron, you beat them last year, injuries can happen. Like, you just overreact to that and then leave yourself vulnerable to other teams in the East that have really good front court. So, I don't know. But, Bill, thanks for coming on today, as always. It's always great to have you on the show. Where can people find you on Twitter? And is there anything you'd like to tease that's kind of coming up? I know it's a dead period right now, but...
It is a dead period. I am going to hopefully have something about this trade up at Fear the Sword later this week, if I ever find the time. And you can find me on Twitter at Break the Huddle.
Actually, one question for you as a follow-up. We have about a month really until the NBA season gets going. What's a TV show or a book people or whatever you want it to be that people should read while they have some time before every night of the week is consumed by basketball?
Oh, God. Oh, man, I like that question. I am going to reread The Breaks of the Game over the next few weeks. That's one of my goals. I'm going to read it on lunch at work. So you should definitely read that because it's one of the best basketball books ever written. That's one. Man.
While you're thinking, this would be my three. Peaky Blinders. Yeah.
You got three? Oh, TV shows too. Okay, yeah.
Peaky Blinders. Ball Don't Lie is awesome. And Ian Levy, friend of the show Ian Levy, and a really good human being, Ian Levy, is doing a big HP summer read over Howard Paroxysm with Iago about the book. And my third one, if you want to just be a nerd for a little bit, because like me, I'm a freaking nerd, the Green Arrow DC comic series is like literally Oliver Queen like fighting banks and like fighting rich people, and it's just like super politically relevant, and it's just like, huh, it's kind of weird that you have a dude like that is actually rich in the comics like fighting banks and like representing people today that are like really angry at Wall Street. So yeah, that'd be my three.
I was thinking about books and completely blanked on the TV show or movie aspect of it. This Kubo and the Two Strings movie is not something that would be up my alley. I don't know if you've seen the previews for this. It's the new animated film.
Yeah, I literally watched this before we started recording.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think it looks really cool. I just saw like an extended trailer for it, and that's not my thing, and I'm excited to see it. And then if you are not watching The Night Of, and you need to get your fix of, it's on HBO, if you need to get your fix of uncomfortable suspenseful, sad, horrifying, amazing television, The Night Of on HBO is definitely for you. It's like an 8-part miniseries. It's just, it's almost done. It's terrific. Absolutely terrific.
Yeah, those are, yeah, Night Of is great. I'm like through episode 3. I'm all the way in. But Bill, thanks again for coming on. Thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the podcast. Make sure to download the app, use our promo code, and we'll be back tomorrow, actually, with the mailbag that was supposed to be on Monday, but due to some difficulties slash a work thing that I had, I couldn't get it up, but it'll be up tomorrow. And then Thursday, Trevor Bagnotti will be here on the show to talk about LeBron's longevity. But again, this has been Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs, and we will talk to you guys again soon.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.